Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Rier on YouTube channel. I am Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, along, of course, with J. Travis Rier, owner and operator of the aforementioned Rier on YouTube channel. You got to check it out. Lots of super content there. Give it a like. Give it a subscribe. It's Rier on YouTube. Talking Tide, wrapping up a day here in this edition. Touch on basketball again just a little bit. Before we get out of here, of course, the basketball transfer portal closes, I believe, the 22nd of this month, and then the football portal will close 3 days later. So plenty of portal activity going on right now, but A-Day activity in the spotlight, certainly Travis on Saturday, and in some ways, maybe a spotlight Alabama didn't like because there weren't a lot of people there. I think you and I both.
Wow, they got those rabble rousers like yourself out there doing that man on the street.
Yeah.
Well, causing, problems for the program.
I did man in the bleachers. And the man in the bleachers was none too pleased, Travis. None too pleased.
Mib, man in bleachers.
Yeah. Ran into a couple of them that hadn't even heard it wouldn't be a game.
Oh, geez.
You know, one of them drove from Huntsville, hadn't heard. One of them drove from
Tallahassee. Well, now look, we pretty much knew. And I know you alluded to this in the column too, right? I mean, it was no secret, really, that this wasn't going to be a game. I mean, we talked about it last week here on Talking Tide. There wasn't going to be any steaks and, you know, beanie weenies and all that. Although I see where Tim Keenan, it looked like, still took the defensive line out for steaks. So good
yeah.
for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Those guys need to eat, no doubt about it. But, yeah, you and I were definitely high on our attendance guesses. I think 15 is generous. I think it might have been, 10 or 11 is probably more like it. It's what it looked like to me anyway. There wasn't a soul anywhere in the upper bowl, obviously. And in the lower bowl, it was really just kind of a smattering on both sides and a few in the end zone.
You were there. Myself, like a lot of people, was not. It kind of sounded like a fan day during fall camp is
right.
kind of what it sounded like or what it kind of looked like from what I could see.
That's precisely what it was, right down to the autograph session at the end.
Yeah, running of the fans.
For Yay Alabama members only.
At
$18 a month. But
Got to get those funds up, Got to get those funds up.
Ryan Williams, you want to get the funds up, have a game, right? Maybe you get more signups, right? That's
how about this? You know, I was thinking about this too, Goodbread. How about you do an in-house stream of the game that benefits Yay Alabama? You know what I mean? Like, since it wasn't televised, offer it for like a pay-per-view type thing.
Yeah.
With those funds going to Yay Alabama.
Right.
Maybe you can
right.
do that to raise.
Members get the link. Members get this,
you get the secret code.
You get the stream.
$19.95 and for a year you get the Yay Alabama access or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the stream. I don't
get
know.
That's at least a way to get the credit card number on file, Travis. Yeah. That's what it's all about. It's just getting that card number on file.
And you make that cancellation real hard,
Yeah.
The boys and they call in for that cancellation. They can't get the cancellation to work.
Yeah.
We've worked for some websites that maybe were hard to cancel back in the day, Goodbread.
Yes. Yeah, no question. Yeah, but much more broadly than just Yay Alabama. Some of these online subscriptions, Travis, you can dig all around that website for that cancellation info. And
some of these websites some of these websites are like Hotel California. Check in, but you can never leave.
They bury that cancel info like the golden Easter egg,
Yeah, it's hard to get somebody. Hard to get somebody on those numbers.
But at any rate, not a whole lot of people showed up, obviously, and understandably so, given what the kind of show that's usually put on A-Day. It was a 90-minute workout. There were, I believe, three total periods that featured 11-on-11, but even in that, they weren't tackling live.
We talked about that last week. Totally didn't expect anybody to be going to the ground, you know, and from what I could see, it really wasn't even thud. You know, it's one thing to not go to the ground, but typically you'll at least see thud. This was kind of like Pro Bowl rules before the Pro Bowl just went to pretty much flag football.
You know what? I asked Kane Womack about Jeremiah Beeman earlier today in his press conference. Maybe I should have asked him how much live tackling they did all spring. The answer might be not as much as in the past, shall we say, right?
Well, you might get a better answer in the fall. When look, you've got plenty of time in fall camp, and in fall camp, you got to do some tackling, you know, right now, maybe not as much, but you know, something else we talked about is more than ever, you got to protect your guys in the spring, because 10, 15 years ago, you knew you were going to have some second and third year guys as your depth providers behind your frontline guys. Now all your second and third year guys could be going somewhere else. So, you got to take care of your guys, and it stinks. It stinks for the fans. You know, a lot of this rhetoric too about why there aren't spring games is a bunch of horse crap, in my opinion. You know, I mean, worried about poaching. Like these teams don't know each other's rosters. All they do for about 2 or 3 years is recruit these kids. You know, they're evaluating these kids pretty much as ninth graders now. Everybody knows what you've got. You know, the people who shouldn't be playing spring games, if we want to be honest, in fear of poaching, are the Louisiana Lafayettes who lost a running back to Alabama, or the Ball States, or these teams that are losing starters to the Power Fours, the Power Fives. That's the teams that shouldn't be playing spring games, because that's where you can really find those type of players. You know, at this level in the SEC and the Big Ten, these teams all know what they've got. They know what each other have from a personnel perspective. So spare me, save me the poaching side of this. Now, if you're just wanting to keep guys healthy, you know, you're trying to protect your guys from a health perspective, I can buy that a little more so.
Yeah. Yeah. I posed the same opinion on the Bird app earlier today. I don't buy the Matt Rhule reasoning. I don't necessary. I can buy the injury excuse more than the poaching excuse.
You know who got poached today? You know who got poached today? South Alabama got poached. South Alabama starting quarterback is now going to be the starting quarterback for Bill Belichick at North Carolina. It wasn't Alabama that got poached today, or Tennessee that got poached today.
Right.
It was South Alabama. Back to my point of, I'd be more worried if I were Ball State or Louisiana Lafayette about the poaching side of this thing right after spring practice.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of North Carolina and speaking of transfer quarterbacks, do they get Nico over in Chapel Hill?
It's not going to be the University of Nico, Carolina. It doesn't look like. They took the transfer from South Al today. Look, I mean, if Nico and his peeps are out there pushing 4 million, I just don't see that happening, man. And what we've got now are quarterbacks that have come in his wake. You know, Juju Lewis, he asked Southern California for $2 million in this last cycle. And that was never going to happen at USC. And that's why he's at Colorado.
Yeah.
You know, Lincoln Riley isn't going to give a freshman quarterback $2 million. So there's been a lot of this rah-rah, good for Tennessee sentiment, good for Josh Heupel for standing up. Well, Tennessee kind of started all this by giving Nico $2 million or $2 million plus to start with.
Right.
So save me some of that where Big Orange is concerned, too.
Alabama quarterbacks, Travis. Ryan Grubb, his news conference today, said what we kind of knew, said what you and I have alluded to here lately on the podcast. He's the de facto number one quarterback. Competition still ongoing per the coaching staff, but they came out of spring with Simpson on top. No surprise there.
No. It kind of sounded like it was moving that way, and it's still interesting. You know, to hear Grubb kind of just come right out and say it. And we talked about this last week. You know, you're also thinking about the bigger picture in August and beyond, and knowing how your season starts out how it sets up. And with this schedule, you know, there's been schedules in the past where you knew your first two or three games, if you did decide to go with the least experienced, maybe of a two or three player race, you could kind of ease into the deep end a little bit. I think Florida State being right there at the top of the schedule and on the road has to play into that. But even with all of that, Ty Simpson, when he's been given the opportunity, has done some really good things. We, you know, Keelan Russell's going to be a really good quarterback. I don't think anybody doubts that. But look, DJ Lagway last year going into Florida, you know, he ended up being the guy later in the season, but it was Graham Mertz that was clearly the guy going into last season for the Florida Gators. And I think there's a little bit of that dynamic here. I think Ty Simpson is that, you know, that type of veteran that can kind of keep things stabilized. And there's plenty around Ty Simpson that should allow him to be effective.
Hang on to the football, number one. Yeah. I think you made a great point before A-Day. The quick game will be big for Ty Simpson, too. Get some of those easy first downs, take what the
with
defense
those wide
gives
receivers,
you,
yeah,
et cetera. And then, you know, at that and then anything else you want out of your quarterback, you better get out of your offensive line, too, from a pass protection standpoint. I'm writing about that for tomorrow. But anytime you got a first-year starter at quarterback, if you struggle in pass protection, it is a bad mix.
You do. You do. But I'm leaning optimistically towards this offensive line. And I've yelled from the mountaintops this offseason to this point. Everybody's talking quarterback. I need to see more from this offensive line. I'm yeah. feeling better about it. You know, I'm kind of thinking Wilkin Formby in that tackle situation, feeling better about it. I'm interested to see if Olaseleinen, as much as he was needed at tackle this spring because of Caden Proctor being out and some holes they were trying to fill, could he end up being the guy as the other guard there? Is it Geno Vandermark at the other guard opposite Jaden Roberts? So I'm feeling a tad more optimistic, Good Bread, about that offensive line. But that's still the area on offense I wonder about more than even quarterback still right. to this point.
It certainly sounded today from listening to the coach and staff like Olaseleinen, they kind of see as their Alfred McCullough, their swing guy, both tackles, play him inside too. If you need to play him inside. He looks like the glue kind of coming off the bench at that offensive line, spot. A lot of praise for the two highly touted freshmen, Michael Carroll, Jackson Lloyd. Jackson Lloyd, DeBoer said today, is a little bit more of a pure offensive tackle, whereas I think with Carroll, they see a little bit more swing value. But, you know, if things don't go well at right tackle for Formby, you know, maybe Olaseleinen is a guy that they plug in there. Maybe it's one of these young guys. We'll see.
Yeah, I like the young OL like everybody else does. I think Jackson is exactly that. If Caden Proctor has the year he could have, maybe he moves on to the National Football League and you know you've got your successor there at left tackle. But there's still some things to be proven even at tackle and really that guard spot opposite Jaden Roberts. So take care of business well enough there. Wide receiver looks like it's been upgraded in a lot of ways with Isaiah Horton coming in there and some of the fresh blood in general that they've been able to add and also getting a couple of guys back from injury. You know, running back, obviously you expect Jam Miller to be the guy or one of those top two guys there. It sounds like Richard Young showed some good things during the course of the spring. And, you know, A.K. Deer may be a year away. As dynamic as he is, there's more to it than just that. So there are the pieces on offense with Ryan Grubb now in that main play caller role to certainly elevate that offense. And as we talked about last week and you mentioned tonight, I still think the quick game being a more legitimate part of this offense in 2025 is going to be a big help.
Yeah, speaking of the running back position, Grubb also with some praise for Daniel Hill earlier today.
Big back.
Yeah. He's a big guy who could, you know, maybe deliver some power between the tackles for Alabama if he's able to carve out some kind of a role. A lot of running backs to look at for him for sure. Wide receiver ought to be up. You know, I really think Isaiah Horton is purely an outside guy, but for that reason, guys like Ryan Williams maybe can drop inside a little bit more, play some of that slot receiver role. Obviously, I think Jeremy Bernard's a versatile guy who can move around. They love Lotzer Brooks, the freshman who's been playing in the slot. Cole Adams, obviously, coming back. So plenty of options, Travis. We'll see who delivers.
I think they've got two X's. One from kind of the retro descriptive of the wide receiver position. I think Isaiah Horton can be an X on the outside, right? And I think Ryan Williams can be an X factor. He can be an X. He can be a Z, Y. I think Jeremy Bernard is more of that Z type, or what our grandfathers used to call a flanker.
Right.
That kind of guy. But yeah, I mean, they're set up nicely, boy, with the skill pieces, especially at wide receiver.
Elsewhere, obviously tight end, bad shape there, injury wise. Jay Lindsey, the lone scholarship guy, come fall, and we'll see if Alabama decides to maybe pick up a tight end in the portal. That would not shock me. But they picked up one or two tight ends in the portal in the fall. They're just lesser known guys from smaller schools. But, you know, with Danny Lewis coming back, Marshall Pritchett going to be back. Obviously, Josh Cuevas is your tight end one. He missed the last week or so of spring practice. He gets back, you know, and then you drop Caleb Edwards into the mix as an incoming freshman who hasn't quite enrolled. I believe he'll come in June. Maybe they feel good enough, at least numbers-wise.
Unless they have a portal departure or two, I still think numbers-wise they should be okay.
Yeah.
In part because, as we've talked about, I don't know if they're as 12 heavy this year as they were last year with Dupree and Oots and Cuevas. Maybe they're more 11, you know, with those wide receivers.
Yeah.
Three wide receiver sets, which when you think about Kalen and Grubb and that last year at UW, that's wasn't that largely what they were with those wide receivers?
You know, I watched a whole lot of Washington football from that year, 2023, when Grubb was running that show. I saw a lot of 12. I saw a lot of two tights, but they were a ton of motion, a lot of flex guys. It was pretty heavy 12, and Cuevas was actually in that mix a little bit. But you know, just because they ran a lot of 12 that year, you're right. I mean, if you want the best 11 on the field, that may mean three wideouts.
Yeah. We'll see. It's going to be fascinating to watch. And regardless, I think in terms of numbers, again, barring multiple departures via the transfer portal from the current roster, I would think they could be okay. Now, injuries can change things quick. Just look at what we saw. Some of that may, though, have even been, like we talked about earlier, just trying to protect some guys that you could push if you wanted to in the spring, but didn't want to do that as much.
Defensive side of the ball, Travis, I thought Dejon Lee looked pretty good out there on Saturday. Of course, most of my time was occupied chatting with disgruntled fans who were not hard to find. But I did manage to throw my eyes on the field long enough to catch Dejon Lee for a few reps that I thought were pretty impressive. I think there's a lot of excitement about him with the coach and staff coming in and making an impact at the cornerback position pretty quickly.
Give me those five DBs if they played today. I want Chase Goodbread's five DBs. I mean, think about it, because Damani Jackson wasn't out there. So Damani Jackson, Xavier Brown, that's the corners, isn't it?
You would think so. Obviously, Sab is going to be back and healthy. He'll be at a safety spot, you would expect.
I
think Bray Hubbard's going to earn a starting role in
Bray
that
Hubbard
secondary.
And Deion Sab. That's your and two then safeties.
At your Husky, is it Deshaun Jones?
Yeah, I that's where I was going to go with Jones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, depth, I guess, is the bigger point. If you got Dejon Lee, who is apparently kind of impressing people already in a way that Zabian Brown did a year ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's, and then you still got Cam Calhoun that you brought in.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good sounding, good looking secondary right now. You got Zay Mincy, perhaps, you know, as a depth provider at safety. Now I say all this and we'll see about the portal, you know, but the depth looks good today on April the 14th.
We'll see about the portal. You know, to me, cornerback is one of those positions along with running back and maybe a couple others where you just can't have enough good ones.
No.
Because you are inevitably going to find yourself in a pickle in November if you come up short on the second team. At corner, you get somebody hurt, you throw somebody in there that's not good enough, and they get picked on. The book goes around the SEC. Now all of a sudden you got quarterbacks just looking that guy up for, you know, picking on him. And then running back, obviously, is for different reasons. Running back, you can't have enough of those, more for injury attrition.
You got Dre Kirkpatrick Jr. we haven't even really talked about that can help you out back there. Hey, let me ask you, because this kind of ties in with some movement we saw at the end of last season and going into this offseason. Jalen Mbakwe going from corner to wide receiver. Is he at this point, you think, set up to be a big part of this offense after making that switch? Good, Brad?
It was a quiet spring for Mbakwe. Didn't hear his name a lot from players. Didn't hear his name a lot from the staff either. That doesn't mean he didn't have a good spring. I lightly criticized the move to wide receiver, just from a team standpoint when it happened back in December. To me, corners are just so much more valuable. And I saw a lot of upside in Mbakwe at the corner spot. I thought they would have been better off leaving him there. And who knows
is Gelato here in the comments talking about Mbakwe? Bama let a DB wideout take the team hostage.
Yeah, well, who else could he be referring to? To whom?
What flavor of gelato is that? Spicy gelato.
Yeah.
Only one I know, but yeah.
You know, the word was that he didn't make a wide receiver demand when he hit the portal. Obviously, the timing of that was a little questionable. Regardless, I think from a team standpoint, they would have been better off leaving him at corner. Now, that was before they went out and got Cam Calhoun, I believe, right?
I mean, I think they're okay now.
We'll see if he's able to break through and make a big impact at that wide receiver spot. But it won't be easy.
The thing with him, too, though, is the return game. He can still, regardless of positionally where he calls home, you know, he's still got that potential, too. But I'm not ready to go B.J. Scott. You remember B.J. Scott
came
in from Mobile? And look, B.J. Scott deserves a lot of credit. He helped switch that momentum in Mobile. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about Julio coming from Foley to Alabama and how that really turned the tide, and so to speak, down there, Mark Barron that followed and a lot of those guys. But my recollection is it was actually Burton Scott. B.J. Scott was a highly coveted guy from down there, and he's the one who first made that move and really seemed to help. And it didn't turn out to be a great career. And I'm not going there with Mbakwe yet, but he was that kind of guy too. He was a two-way phenom. And it just seemed like it was hard for him to find a position at the SEC level before
Kevin Thomas said, Talking Tide most definitely is, but Talking Tide never left.
Where are you, Kevin? Where you been?
Yeah.
KT?
Talking Tide has been known to take a temporary hiatus or two.
Talking Tide can go on a bender every once in a while. You don't see them for a few weeks. Yeah.
But it never goes away altogether.
Devin Thomas says Southern Fried Sports is next. He says, I don't know. That one's in cold storage. SFS is in cold storage. But that doesn't mean we couldn't wheel it back out. Yeah. KT.
Thaw it out.
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
Ryer on YouTube channel, of course, hosts the Talking Tide podcast. Jump on YouTube, search for Ryer on YouTube, give it a like and a subscribe. Travis has got a whole bunch of really good content there.
25 minutes in, good bread. Where else are you going to get this kind of Bama discussion, you know? When we take you back to Burton Scott. We start talking about cancellation being like the Hotel California.
Right. Well,
Gelato chiming in with players taking the team by hostage. I mean, yeah, go find that somewhere else. All right.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. How about a little basketball before we get out of here, Travis, real quickly. Darion Reed and Jaron Stevenson, I believe since we last potted, have decided to file their exit papers as well, headed to the transfer portal. I believe Jaron Stevenson, is headed home to play for the Heels. He is a, Pittsboro, North Carolina native, which of course is right outside of Chapel Hill. And looks like he's headed back to UNC, not back to UNC, but back home to play for his hometown school.
Yeah. And when that move happened, I guess he had the do not contact tag. I mean, you kind of went straight to UNC. I mean, the ties there, obviously, multiple ties. So, hey, look, Jaron Stevenson, 2 years at Alabama, had some big, big moments in that 2024 tournament run. Mm-hmm. We talked about this before. He's got to continue to get stronger, whether it's as a rebounder, whether it's with the ball in his hands. And so that's the hope. And look, I think a lot of folks thought Jaron Stevenson coming out of high school, even as a reclassifier, because he did reclassify, still what, 19 years old, I think,
something like that.
He was going to be maybe a one and out. I think he's a 4-year player at this point. I think he's going to be a 4-year guy. And look, in today's NIL world, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, as I'm sure he's finding out right now and going to North Carolina. So, hey, hopefully it works out for Jaron. I guess the thing I wouldn't have thought was that between the three, Chase, between Mo, between Reed, and between Stevenson, all three would go. Right. You know what I mean? I figured one of those three would be back for 2025, 2026. Not sure about you.
Yeah, I agree. Diabate leaving, obviously the biggest blow of those three. Although I see NBA potential in Darion Reed. I think there's a lot of upside there. He could be a better player than Diabate next year, potentially.
Can't make the club from the tub, though.
No.
I mean, you got to be on the floor. So
you got to be on the floor. He had a lot of injury problems that limited him during conference play. Obviously, he got back a little bit in time to play in the postseason. But Reed's a guy that I think Nate Oates was definitely looking forward to developing. Yeah. Definitely saw him as somebody that would be a nice fit into what they're doing. As I mentioned, top of the show, I think the transfer portal for basketball is open for like another 8 days or so. So maybe Nate makes a move before that thing closes. Of course,
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
I mean, how many guys does he have rostered right now for next year? I should probably take a look at that. But Kevin Thomas with an interesting point here, our guy KT. What a time to be a basketball fan for Alabama. Lose two guys to the portal that go to UNC and Kentucky. Yeah,
imagine that.
That's a little different. Yeah. Used to be you'd take, if you're Alabama, you'd think, well, we'll take the eighth or ninth guy
right
from UNC or Kentucky. But these are guys that are going to Kentucky and Carolina to start, you would think, right?
Or at least make starter money.
They're it sounds like Mo, he's not getting six man money. It doesn't sound
I don't think so either.
In Lexington. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how this roster continues to evolve. I mean, it just kind of accentuates some things, because we haven't even talked about LeBaron Fylon going all in now with the NBA draft. So don't you need someone else that can play on the basketball? I mean, what do you got right now? You got Aiden Holloway and Reitzel, I guess.
Reitzel. But
is he really a true on the ball guy?
And we talked about that.
I think you need another guy that can really play on the basketball legitimately. I don't know about you.
No, for sure. Reitzel and Holloway both have that swing guard feel to them, more so than a guy that's going to handle your penetration, lead you in assists, hold the turnovers down, make the right decision at the rim. I mean, those are all things, obviously, that were kind of right up Mark Sears' alley. And when they're up Mark Sears' alley, he's playing 35 minutes a game, they can't be up anybody else's alley, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's still, to me, there's still some work to be done. I don't doubt that Nate will get it done. I mean, we've got plenty of a sample size at this point to suggest – he's more than going to get that done, but still some blanks to be filled in for this team.
All the blanks, however, have been filled in here on this edition of Talking
One Tide. One more though, good bread. I think we need to hit before we get out of here. Bill Oliver passed away today.
Yes. R.I.P.
Yep. The great, really an all timer where Alabama football is concerned. I don't go back as far as to say playing days and things like that, but for us, in terms of, you know, our college years, especially Brother Bill and that defense, that 92 defense and the work he did with that. And I know you do a lot of stuff with Cope, and I would love to hear his thoughts on it. But Brother Bill Oliver, especially where secondaries were concerned, that was about the only guy that back then seemed like he had something for Steve Spurrier from time to time. And even he took some lumps from Spurrier.
He took a 1991 lump in Gainesville pretty good.
Yeah, he did. And that was as much on the offense. The offense was so bad in early 91. I was at that game at Florida Field, and it was terrible. The offense was as much to do with that blowout as anything, but yeah, the 93 Sugar Bowl and that masterful performance against Gino Toretta and the Miami Hurricanes. It was an absolute all-timer. I know some folks weren't happy. He ends up at Auburn coaching with Terre, but you know, all in all, just a mastermind, a guy that was immensely respected. And thoughts and prayers go out to his family.
Passes away at 85 years old, originally, I believe, from Eppes, Alabama, if I'm pronouncing that right. It's over on the western border near that Mississippi line. And he was a part of five national championships, one as a player, four as a coach, three as an assistant coach under Bryant, and then, of course, really well known, as you said, for the work he did on that 92 team. And in particular, the way he orchestrated a phenomenal defensive game plan against Miami in that Sugar Bowl. Also, the 61 team that he played for and won a national championship on, I believe that was the team that only gave up like 20-something points the whole season. So he played for one of the greatest defenses in Alabama history and coached one of the greatest defenses in Alabama history.
Yeah, just an all-time great brother.
No question about it. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We will talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.